The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the All Elite Podcast.
All Elite Podcast.
Covering all the latest news and results from the AEW.
Wait a minute. Side of the head of Cody.
This is pro wrestling analysis as you've never heard before.
Deathly Hallows!
Might be it.
One, two, three, can save it!
Coming to you every single week. So without any further delay, let's go all in and get the show started right now.
Hello and welcome everybody to AEW Dynamite Aftershock. I'm your host, Zach Perez, at Spots High on Twitter, and I think it's safe to say that the WWE left it wide open this week for AEW to capitalize and deliver on potentially being the best wrestling product of the week, and I think they definitely stepped in and had an amazing night here on Wednesday night, and I'm just coming off watching it about an hour ago, and my initial reaction was just that it seemed like a very well put together show. The cards are always stacked, and no matter where you are in the night, there's always some surprises and some really fast paced action going on. So it's always an exciting night whenever you tune into AEW Dynamite. So I definitely think that we have to kick things off right away with the main event. What a finish to end the night. You had Chris Jericho versus Darby Allin in a Philadelphia street fight. And just immediately, it had the big match feel. You had Chris Jericho coming in as the Painmaker, as he was announced, and had the face paint on. And Darby Allin was adorned with a new type of face paint as well, where you had champ written probably dozens of times all across his face. And even though the buildup was relatively small for this contest, that there was still a lot of friction between these two, and that Darby Allin was coming at him very aggressively, and they sold it from the start that it was going to be a street fight, so to speak, and you had Darby Allin come out swinging with the punches, and I think that he really sells his strikes very well. He comes across as very aggressive in the way he swings, and he pulls his punches at seemingly the last possible second without actually coming as if he's swinging in a boxing match. So he comes very close with his strikes and sells them very well, and has a very aggressive style, and he showcased that throughout this match. I mean, I struggled to try and think what comparison I could come up with for Darby Allin, and I guess the closest I could summarize his in-ring style would be some sort of cross between like a Jeff Hardy, like a really early Jeff Hardy, and Raven, sort of a hardcore specialist with a lot of high-flying ability mixed in. It's just, it's always entertaining to watch whenever Darby Allin is in a contest, and he's made a big fan of me so far, and I know he appears in a lot of Northeast wrestling shows. He's a Northeast wrestling champion still as I record this, as I remember, so I definitely want to make it out at some point to catch some of his in-ring action up close and personal, but for now, watching it here tonight was definitely a good experience nonetheless, and Chris Jericho put on a good match with him. I definitely think they left a little bit in the tank, but that's to be expected when there's not really a feud build-up, so I think all in all, for what this contest needed to be and what it was, it definitely showcased Darby Allin very well. You had him getting tied up with the duct tape to the arms, which was a really nice setup. And then you had him doing springboards and suicide dives, all with his hands tied behind his back and jumping off of the ropes and everything. Just insane to see somebody doing that, not being able to have their hands or their arms, for that matter, to brace for impact and things on the bumps. So great job by Darby Allin of utilizing what he could with offense during that and making what would seem like a rather limited available moveset into something that was very entertaining to watch and kept you on the edge of your seat as you watched him try to pull off these different moves and basically literally kicking Jericho's ass with his hands tied behind his back, which really made him look better than ever. And that's saying something considering the torrid start that Darby Allin has had with AEW to this point. So very much a shout out to the abilities that both of these men have, that I think that they could outdo this at some point in the future. It's just a matter of time before they get back together and Darby Allin is challenging for a title again. It might even be off Chris Jericho's waist by the time he gets another shot, just due to the nature of how many people there are in line. But that's just the way it is, and I think Darby can definitely be a big part of AEW's picture going forward. And we did end up having Jake Hager getting involved to finish the contest, which I think definitely undermined it just a little bit. I understand the idea with trying to get the Inner Circle over and getting that whole stable established, so I can see the thought process behind it, but I just think that I would have gone a different direction. Probably would have had it have a more legitimate sort of finish besides Jake Hager getting a strike in there, but nonetheless, I completely understand the booking, and it's all sensical and tying together, and can lead to maybe Darby Allin getting another shot in the future due to the way that things ended. So I kind of thought that might be what would happen when it was a street fight, when it was announced as such. I kind of thought that would be the way they would kind of get themselves out of booking Jericho to lose and not also making Darby Allin look bad. You know, a little bit of predictable booking, but that's just going to happen every once in a while. You know, it's not going to always be edge of your seat surprises and things like that. So sometimes you do need to lean back on the expected outcome a little bit at times. So I think that definitely happened here, but we had an entertaining moment where the full stable ended up celebrating in the ring with a little bit of the bubbly and just, you know, cracking a toast with Chris Jericho for retaining his title. And basically, they're sort of the main event mafia, so to speak, and they got their stable in there who is full of mainstays, and you had, you know, Proud and Powerful now, formerly LAX, I still want to keep calling them that, but you had them, Ortiz and Santana, competing earlier in the night as well, which we'll get to later on, but everybody's looking dominant so far. Jake Hager's been treated like a true monster should be treated so far, and has that feel down pat, and they're really playing up the idea that he is undefeated in MMA, and I think that that can carry his character pretty well as long as he maintains that alongside his wrestling career, which would be kind of a new territory in the world of professional wrestling. But beyond that, and without further digressing off the trail here, the top of the card was definitely a good way to kick off the show, you know, once again showcasing the fact that AEW is about tag team action and innovating what that can mean, and just some of the most fluid and unbelievable tag team maneuvers that you'll see in just about any promotion throughout history. Just really redefining what it means to have tag team action be a focal point of your promotion. So that's definitely a testament also to the talent that is in SCU, and then also with the ones they competed against, the Best Friends. We did have a moment at the beginning where the members of SCU who were to represent them here was originally supposed to be Christopher Daniels and, of course, Frankie Kazarian, going with the age and experience and not the youth, as Scorpio Sky had said previously. But we ended up having SCU get attacked by Rey Fénix and Pentagon Jr. So definitely threading along that storyline a little bit. I criticized a little bit of the promo work setting up to this, so it's nice to see that they're kind of bouncing back and trying different methods and extending this feud out and still giving it the breathing room it should be because of the talent that's involved. So definitely think that they will pull out an amazing match. Probably we'll see some sort of stipulation get involved, I'm assuming. But that will be a very interesting matchup to keep an eye on. So definitely looking forward to seeing that. But for now, I was very well satisfied with what I saw with SCU versus the Best Friends here, as Scorpio Sky ended up stepping in for the kayfabe injured Christopher Daniels after the package pile driver from Pentagon to the ramp. So this ended up creating a really great contest. I mean, Scorpio Sky, as he usually does, as JR will make sure to remind you, he seems to have a real good feeling for talent, and he really spots out Scorpio Sky and makes sure to mention how great he is while he's on screen. So he's a fan, and I'm definitely a fan as well with how unbelievable he is in the ring and his moveset and being able to do the things that he can do. It's almost like if Ricochet was more unleashed in WWE, it's definitely, you see a lot of similarities in their moveset and in their styles. But this was, of course, a tag team title first round tournament, one loss elimination setup, so whoever lost went home. And we did, of course, have SCU advancing, which seemed kind of like a no-brainer move in my book because they've just been holding up so well and kind of putting people over so much. This will be a good time to let them have the luster of why it is that they're allowed to put people over, so to speak. You know, it's going to come with a lot of criticism if you just keep relying on the fact that they're veterans of the industry and they've been here, done that sort of thing. They also need to prove it now as well. It's a what have you done for me lately sort of sport and industry, so it definitely takes some victories to be able to put people over with victories over your team. So this is a good move, and SCU moved on with some really crazy back and forth action throughout the contest, just combination moves and being able to do things that very few tag teams can do at the pace that they did, with Trent and Chuck Taylor doing various combination moves. You had the soul food combination, just so many innovative moments where you saw exactly what tag team action can be at its best, and pulling out some maneuvers that you never would think that you would see together, and just crazy, and a testament to just how good these individual teams are and how deep this tag team division in AEW is. And I think that this will end up becoming such a huge part of AEW's product, and it's more the better for it, because these contests are just consistently fantastic in the tag division, and this tournament is going to be something that is going to be a focal part of the television, and that is an excellent sign for me. And I think that fans are very much appreciating it. You once again heard the rabid fan base supporting this product to death. You know, it very much made sense that they were in Philadelphia. It's a very ECW-esque fan base. You almost think that you would hear the UF'd up chants if a botch were to come on. It's very similar to that kind of atmosphere, and especially being in Philadelphia, it kind of harkens to that memory of ECW. So but I digress a little bit here. This contest ended with SCU moving on and the tag tournament progressing along. I think definitely we'll see more of these two teams facing against each other in the future, so you always have to leave people wanting more. but there really wasn't too much more you could ask for an opening contest, and it wasn't overbooked as some have criticized, so it just led into the beginning of the night quite nicely and set things up going forward. And then once again we had another tag team match, further showing exactly what AEW was about, and this was Santana and Ortiz versus a couple of jobbers. I think I caught the name of John Silver and Alex Reynolds, but they just put themselves over in a quick squash match, nothing too big. They ended up hitting their tag finisher, the Street Sweeper, which once again I think it's worth mentioning that it's nice to just see tag teams having really legitimate finishers. You know, you see it in WWE with the Viking Raiders, who just picked up the tag titles, and they have that awesome Viking Experience finisher move. And I think that's something that's missing from WWE, where, you know, tag teams have their definitive style, their definitive finishing moves, and they're really sold as legitimate contenders and not just, you know, middle of the card, hanging around until they get a shot at a singles title type of feel. You can exist as a tag team and exist as that for a good portion of your career without being a bad thing. And that will be, of course, a big portion of Santana and Ortiz's career, as they continually showcase why they were brought over from Impact. Just really good up-and-coming team with a lot of mixed abilities in the ring. You know, they're definitely just as home high-flying as they are having kind of a brawl grinded-out contest. And this wasn't exactly a showing out, but not exactly showing or shying away, I should say. So Santana and Ortiz did end up looking to the screen to see Chris Jericho announcing that they will have a matchup with the Young Bucks at Full Gear. So that will be a great contest. You know, a lot of back and forth between them, I'm sure. The Young Bucks have been basically trying to put over everybody. It seems they don't want to win. You know, a lot of criticism was coming to the fact that the Elite would be over-pushed and over-win, and it definitely hasn't been the case, and the Young Bucks have proven that, especially with their contest with Private Party last week, which was phenomenal and some of the best tag team wrestling I've seen in gosh, maybe a decade, I don't know. It was just absolutely a renaissance of what tag team wrestling can be and what it should look like. And once again, that's just a theme with AEW. But after this match and after the subsequent Chris Jericho announcement, we did have a video package with Cody just selling the fact that he is focused on Jericho's belt and coming for it at Full Gear. And it's kind of like the classic Rocky montage-esque situation where, you know, he's running on the treadmill, he's super focused, and you have Brandy saying that's all his mind can focus on at the moment is getting that AEW gold, and the fact that he's been focused on this for so long and being the top of the heap and top dog in his own promotion, being that he's the executive vice president. And MJF was on there selling it as well, and just a lot of good content for a very simple video package, just furthering along a feud that wasn't extended elsewhere on the program tonight. So it's nice to just leave a little connection point to bring people in if they maybe missed last week, or just basically to keep it fresh in people's mind in general. But after this, we had Riho defending her women's championship belt for the first time against Britt Baker, and so far I think those two have actually been the standout to the division, so I was very excited to see where this contest went, and it did not disappoint. Riho definitely reminds me a little bit of a Rey Mysterio-esque style with the fast-paced action, especially when Rey first came into the WWE and was just showing out and going at a pace that was kind of unmatched for the time, especially in the WWE, and him being a smaller guy and having that underdog, consistent underdog tone to his matchups, and him selling that so well and still being able to feel like a legitimate threat. I think Riho very much mirrors that style of wrestling, and despite her small frame, she definitely still sells her offense and her opponents do a good job of selling her offense and putting her over, and I definitely think it's a very fitting first champion given her track record and her having been in the business for such a long time now. So this match ended with a roll-up, which I definitely have to say I don't like surprise roll-up finishes, but the way that AEW has booked most of the matches that they've had that have ended up in roll-ups, they book it in such a way that it's sensical and it feels like more of a legitimate wrestling maneuver, something that kind of comes out of nowhere but doesn't feel cheap and like they're getting out of there quickly with a win. So was done from Britt Baker's lockjaw submission move, which has been sold as basically unbeatable to this point. Had two people tap out to it so far. On one of the matches was on AEW Dark, and so they've sold that as basically being a finish that is very devastating. So having Riho end up turning this over into a pin victory off of the roll-up definitely fit in with the booking, definitely made sense, and capped off a very good contest. And we'll see more of this in the future, I'm sure, but, you know, Bea Priestley will definitely want her shot at Britt Baker, and that may come at Full Gear too. So that will be something to keep an eye on, and it is nice to see women having a sort of feud brewing without having to have a title involved in the picture. It always seems like that's the only way you get booked as a female in the WWE, is to be involved in some sort of title picture. Otherwise, you're kind of background noise. So good to see them extending things and having things exist beyond just the title matches. So that'll be something to keep an eye out in the next few weeks of programming leading into Full Gear. But another amazing, just ridiculous tag team contest between the Lucha Bros and Jurassic Express followed that. And Marco Stunt ended up replacing the injured Luchasaurus in this matchup, which, of course, I'm quite disappointed about. I'm a big, big fan of Luchasaurus. I think he's one of the bright spots of AEW and one of their big future stars, especially as a tandem or trio, whatever it is that you would say, with Jungle Boy and Marco Stunt. But I have to say, Marco Stunt really impressed me in this matchup. Reminds me a lot of Spike Dudley, especially Spike Dudley in the era of ECW, where he would basically just take an ass beating within an inch of his life. And interestingly enough, Spike is actually, I had to look this up for context out of curiosity, Spike is actually a whole 6 inches, a whole half foot taller than Marco Stunt. So that just gives you a size reference as to what you're looking at when you see Marco in a ring, if you haven't actually witnessed it with your own eyes. And they use his size to their advantage in the way they do their offense. Usually you have Luchasaurus, who kind of adds something to that mix as well. But in this case, you had Jungle Boy doing the heavy lifting, if you will, and kind of tossing Marco around at the Lucha Bros, who did an amazing job of selling Marco Stunt as a legit threat too. You had him kind of being thrown around doing some tornado DDTs, and the way Rey Fénix was planted with one, that was sold perfectly. And they just did a great job of making each other look really good, which is just something that is consistent across the board, the professionalism and the respect that you can tell these guys have for each other. And they're just kind of letting loose and being comfortable in the ring. And it's almost like being able to have a really good improv comedy act where everything is clicking and you've got the audience behind you. It's just very free-flowing and independent ideas kind of interjecting with each other and turning into an amazing match with some crazy spots and just such a fluidity between the two teams. And the Lucha Bros are just so consistently perfect. It's worth mentioning just how flawless and innovative their performances are, regardless of what tag team they're facing. So, you know, Jungle Boy is well ahead of his years at only 21 years of age, and Marco Stunt is just a couple years older than that. So they showed out just as well as the veterans did in this matchup, but that's a large part, too, to how great the Lucha Bros are. Not taking anything away from the talent of Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy, but the Lucha Bros are just a machine in the ring, and especially as a cohesive unit, and did a great job in this contest. One spot worth mentioning in particular, though, was Marco showed out with a kip up to an enziguri, and Pentagon just sold it as if he just got his jaw taken off, and that was beautifully done. You had a standing moonsault double knee from Jungle Boy that led to a 450 splash from Marco, and there was just a sense and a feeling that you would see those two manage to overcome the fact that Luchasaurus was injured and basically show out and end up taking the victory here, but that was not the case. You had some kind of heelish work by the Lucha Bros with, I believe it was Pentagon swinging Marco around by his hair across the ring, you know, kind of effortlessly, like a giant swing by Cesaro sort of looking maneuver. And then they did the Zero Mercy finisher, which, again, beautiful tag team finishing move. Refreshing to see a beautiful executed tag finisher that capped off the match. Just a theme throughout the tag teams, but it's all the little things that make for a great tag division. Also, we'll have the occasional kind of thrown together tag matches as well to break up the established teams. And Hangman Adam Page and Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley and Pac is a great example of just that. You had Hangman kind of coming in with an alliance with Kenny Omega through his involvement with the Elite, but you had the wild card fact that Jon Moxley and Pac seem to have kind of been abrasive toward each other. Kenny Omega had done the showdown with Moxley with the barbed wire broom and barbed wire bat last week, and Pac interrupted that showdown before it happened. And if you didn't catch it, Kenny Omega ended up having a dark match, an unsanctioned match on AEW Dark, very similar to Joey Janela versus Jon Moxley in the first quote-unquote unsanctioned match of AEW. It does not count towards the records and all of that, which is a nice little touch. Again, once again, the little things are what sells the realism. So very, very smartly done. And if you have not seen that matchup, definitely worth checking out. Kenny Omega versus Joey Janela in that unsanctioned match. Basically a pay-per-view quality match that was for free on YouTube, which is just ridiculous. I mean, they put out such consistently good wrestling. I mean, I don't know how people cannot really be a fan of what AEW was putting out. I guess, you know, to each his own, but it just seems crazy to me. If you like really good, fast-paced, crazy action, AEW has delivered that, not only just on their television show, but now extending out to Tuesdays with AEW Dark, too. But regardless, I'm going off on my love of the product there, so getting back into it, we did see a great back and forth contest. You know, Hangman showing off his athleticism in this match. You know, deceptively athletic individual. You know, he looks stacked, but he's still able to do in this matchup a standing shooting star press, a multitude of suicide dives, and then a moonsault to the outside, getting caught by all three guys, and just really showed off and showed out here. And I think that it was well deserved, given that he did have to take the loss to Jericho. It was nice to see him put over well in this contest. And I like the fact as well that at the beginning of this match, we immediately saw Omega and Moxley just going at each other. They have that really good chemistry and really deep kind of heat in their feud right now against each other, and just selling everything so well with how they have that hatred and animosity, and they're definitely going to have a ridiculously good match. As JR even said, a potential match of the year candidate coming up when they face off against each other at Full Gear. So very much looking forward to that, and this just further intensified that feeling. Moxley has looked absolutely incredible since he left the WWE. Looks like a legitimately badass, tough guy who was just, you know, swinging at his punches, especially at the start of this matchup, showed off his, more bare-knuckle-esque style and throwing a lot of force into his strikes and looking very crisp and clean in the ring. And I just love the dynamic between him and Omega, who, it's worth mentioning here, the selling of everything across the entire match by Kenny Omega, just absolutely genius. That moment where he did a kind of a suicide dive, flip over the ropes, and landed kind of a little awkwardly, kind of cracking his leg, but you could tell he was fine. But being the genius wrestler that he is, just decided immediately he was going to sell that as an injury. You had the quote-unquote medical side doctor or whatever come up and check on him, and he obviously continued with the match. And just, he has just a simple way of knowing exactly what to do at any given time to get the reaction necessary. But this contest was just nonstop, fast-paced action, just high intensity, high octane. Just, it's almost like they were just on nitrous throughout the whole contest, you know, going at full speed and just throwing everything they had at each other. And that made a whole lot of sense given Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley's animosity with each other and hatred building there. But Hangman and Pac did a good job of going at each other with just as much high intensity also. So great match. We had a V-trigger to a Deadeye combo, and that's once again just the fluidity of the combinations that happen inside of the ring. You don't see it much elsewhere, just the lead-ins to one maneuver after the other. It's almost like your eyes can't keep up. It's like watching a fireworks show, and that very much showed with this V-trigger to Deadeye combo. It just flowed perfectly into each other, and you had Pac taking that after you had Moxley flip off Pac and hit the Dirty Deeds on his own tag team partner for the night, and basically saying he didn't give a shit about winning the match tonight. Very stone cold in the delivery of it, and planting him with the DDT in the middle of the ring, and just showing off the fact that Jon Moxley does what Jon Moxley wants to do, and that is all. And just sold his character beautifully. Really made for another great episode of AEW Dynamite. Everything has just been so consistent so far. The tag team action is always great. The women's division is always great. You know, everything just seems to be getting stronger. They're rolling along. Had the first title defense for Chris Jericho and a great matchup in the main event, and setting up this Inner Circle stable very well. There's tons of storylines to follow without feeling forced whatsoever. They're very organic and naturally developing. So just a great product so far. And once again, as a wrestling fan, you just love to see so much wrestling being in the mainstream and being more available and more accessible to a wider audience than ever. You have NWA with their Power Now. You have Impact getting back onto a more reputable channel. Now you have AEW Dark on Tuesdays also to give you another hour or so of wrestling content. And like I said, you know, in the case of the Kenny Omega, Joey Janela match, a pay-per-view quality match for free just on a Tuesday afternoon. And I have to say, after the whole WWE draft debacle of this week, it was refreshing, especially to the Firefly Funhouse being burnt down. It just kind of, it was almost like a smack in the face to the fan base. So having this really refreshingly new and innovative promotion to follow up on that was just very, very nice to have, and very nice to be able to lean back and say, that WWE is not the only show on any given week. And, you know, who knows? In the future, it may be AEW has a bad show and Raw or SmackDown is better. And I'll be sure to tell you that. I'm a fan of all wrestling, and I watch just about everything wrestling that I can get my hands on. So as long as I have enough time in my schedule, I'm watching it, and I'm getting involved in it and keeping an eye on just about as much as I can. So if on a given week that does happen where Raw or SmackDown seems to stick out as better to me, then I'll be sure to mention it here. I'm very unbiased in my opinion about what I like as a wrestling product. It doesn't matter whose brand is stamped on it. I just want to see exactly what type of wrestling I like and I enjoy, and I think that's the way that you should be as a fan of anything, really. Just accepting that, you know, you can have a voice as a fan and, you know, not overstep your bounds and just say your opinion and hope that that has some sort of trickle-down effect to what the product actually delivers in return. So just being supportive of what you do like and letting that speak for itself. But I think that is just about a good place to end it for this edition of the AEW Dynamite Aftershock. I will be bringing these to you every Thursday, everywhere you can get your podcast from. And once again, you can follow me at Spots High on Twitter. My name is Zach Perez. And for now, goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night. Goodbye and good night.